This episode of Fuel for the Soul is powered by ASICS. Head over to ASICS.com and sign up for a one ASICS account. It's completely free, and when you sign up, you will receive 10% off your first purchase. You'll also gain access to exclusive colorways on ASICS.com, free standard shipping, special birthday month discounts, and more.
Hi, this is Thomas with Believe in the Run.
This is Megan with Believe in the Run. And this is Megan with Featherstone Nutrition.
A.K.A. Feathers!
There it is.
All right, we're dropping that. Hey, guess what I'm going to do during the podcast today?
What are you going to do?
I'm going to eat 20 grams of protein.
Oh.
I'm a little hungry. And I did almost a triathlon this morning.
You forgot to swim? Or was that in the bathtub? What was?
Well, I don't, is our bathtub big enough for that? You've been in it.
Yeah. Well, no, probably not.
Yeah. I've got that ice barrel. Maybe I could do it in that.
Oh.
But no, I just did a cycling, running, and then weightlifting. But you had mentioned these Rise bars, so I tried. And they're not a sponsor or anything, so don't get all crazy, people. But they are not for people who want candy bars. They are for people who want protein and peanut butter.
Yeah.
Is, I think,
they're good.
What it's
almonds?
About.
Are those ones almonds? Or, right.
Mm-hmm.
Almond
butter.
Honey almond, I think.
Honey almond whey protein. That's all that's in it. But aren't they good for literally being whey protein, almonds, and honey? Like, that's it.
Yeah.
They're good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Three simple ingredients.
I dig it.
You recommended it. I think you've gotten feedback. Some people like them. Some people don't.
Right. There's some people that are like, they're not good, Megan. And I'm like, well, if you're expecting a candy bar, they're not good. But if you legit want
they're still pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think they're sweet. Sloan actually tried one yesterday, my six-year-old, and she was like, Mom, this is gross. She threw the rest of the piece out that I gave her. I was like, well, okay, fine. I like them.
You know that they kind of remind me of those Tiger Milk bars or whatever? Remember those? I don't know.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't think I've ever had one. Mm. Yeah.
The other product that you recommended that I'm loving.
Ooh.
Is the Never Second stuff.
Yeah? Have you been using those gels like solely on long runs?
Yes, I have. They have the caffeine one and the non-caffeine one. And I like that they're not like heavy, gooey jelly. They're more like a little more liquidy. And so I can get them down a little easier. But also, I've been using their bars. They sent some bars that have carbs and I've been using them instead of graham crackers. You know, I get on my bike and have those. But I found out, I thought we had rats or something. But it was really my boys, we put them too close to their stuff where they can eat in the pantry. I was like, Meg, have you been eating all my bars? The boys are eating them like they're candy.
They're good. They sent you That's guys the you chocolate ones, right? Yeah, well, the teenagers are eating them. Yeah.
What other flavors did they have?
They sent me some berry ones, too. And they're good, too. They're I mean, so from a nutrition standpoint, they do. They remind me of like 3 graham crackers from a nutrition standpoint. A little bit lower in fat, actually. There's like 30 grams of carbs in them.
Oh, wow.
Not much fat. They're good. Yeah, I love it.
No wonder I look so good.
Yeah.
I've been using them. So I've been, with my foot hurting, I've been doing, to warm up, I do like 30 to 40 minutes on the bike first. Mm-hmm. And then jump on either the mill or go out for my run. So I've been needing a little extra something. Mm-hmm. And so I've been using those, and they've been great. But now they're gone.
I just got into the like long runs in this marathon block where I have to take in multiple gels, and I forgot how much I don't enjoy that and how out of practice I was. And like when I was getting ready to take my second gel on the 20 miler this past weekend, I was like, "Oh my gosh, I don't want to do this." And it's like. You really do have to get back into practice and make sure your stomach is ready for that sugar and stuff.
Would you try the Never Second?
I know the Morton works for me, so I just don't want to change it. I'm too weird about it.
I like Morton, but the way that the Never Second goes down is so much easier, especially if you don't want to be taking it. Like it's almost like drinking a melted popsicle.
Yeah. That's a really good description of it. And it's smooth. See, my thing was, and I told them this, I have trouble opening it at race pace. like I have a really, like that was my only deterrent to it. Like I do, I like it because it has a little bit of added water, so you don't have to take it like at the aid station with water. That's like a huge plus of the Morton's to me. So it has that. I had trouble getting them open. But I have a question. I have some people in my group that want to try the caffeine, but they weren't sure about the Never Second flavors of the caffeinated one. So which one did you try and what did you think of it?
I think my caffeinated flavor is lime.
Lime? I didn't know. I thought it was... Really? Do they have a lime caffeine? I thought it was like espresso or chocolate or something and people weren't sure about it. Really?
No, it's lime.
Oh.
Yeah, I lime in like a berry for the regular. It's like there's a green box and a pink box.
Yeah.
And it tastes... I mean... It tastes fine. Like, I didn't have any problem with it at all.
Okay. I'm fact checking this because my lime does not have. So am I. My lime is not caffeinated. I swore that they were just, here they are. Yeah. You know, you're fibbing. It's espresso or cola.
Really?
You thought you had caffeine.
You thought you had caffeine. Yeah.
Maybe, I'm going to show them Meg when I get home.
Okay.
We'll see. I'll let you know.
It also could have been the other brand that
yeah. But I'm glad you're liking them. I dig it.
Yeah,
I do. But if they want to send me the espresso or
cola,
chocolate, definitely cola.
Cola.
I will definitely give that a shot.
Yeah, I can mean enough people drink Coke during like longer efforts, not necessarily running. Perhaps it's Iron Man, but yeah, that makes sense.
All right, enough about that, Never Second. Before we dive into, so today we're going to just go over a bunch of listener questions from you guys, but we have an incredible listener update that we need to mention. Someone wrote into you, Megan, after they listened to our episode with Emily Soul about race photos and what did they do.
So if any of you guys listened to the episode with Emily Saul, or if you haven't, you need to go back because we talked a lot about some of your questions and like the psychology of why we're thinking certain ways about our body as runners. And one of the most epic suggestions that I did not see coming from Emily Saul when people were saying that they hated their race photos is just like totally off the cuff, totally candid. She's like, well, if you want good race photos, then hire someone for a photo shoot to capture the best you. And for whatever reason, it just took me off guard. I never thought she was going to say that, but it's a really good, it's true, right? Like we are racing when we're running a marathon. Like if we want to look pretty, like have a different photo shoot to look pretty and look good when you're running. So we had somebody who did this. Her coach asked for a racing photo of hers and she hadn't raced or didn't have one she liked recently. So she found her friend whose daughter is really into photography and she hired her to come and take photos of her before her run started so that she had this photo and she showed it to me and it was a beautiful photo. And then she showed me another one that the girl took and she's like, I think I need to start online dating. And she was like ecstatic and like super excited. And I was like, okay. See, look at this. Look at all the good we're doing in this world. Photo shoots to get good photos. I just love it when it comes full circle like that.
I love it.
And I just want to give Emily a shout out. Because since that
episode,
I decided, hey, you know, there's some stuff I'd love to work on. So I hired Emily and have been working with her. And it's been phenomenal. So if you're out there and you're one of those people that gets in their head too much when it comes to running or life in general, Emily is a great person to talk to. So we'll include her information in the notes. I'm really enjoying it. We're unlocking some stuff, so we'll see how it goes.
I feel like everyone could benefit from some Emily in their life. She's just a wonderful human.
For sure. Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and dive into our first listener question here. Did we say who this is from?
It wasn't listed.
All right. So this is from a listener. And they said, hello there. I've been listening to and enjoying your podcast. Thanks so much for putting it out there. I have a question to which I've had no luck finding a definitive answer. If y'all can offer any insight, I'd be so thrilled. Here's the scoop. I have a terrible habit of grazing every night from dinner all the way up to bedtime, from about 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. or 11 p.m. or midnight. I frequently just eat bowl after bowl of ice cream, but it's always sugary and fatty, quote, junk foods. One might think this carb load would help with a morning run, but this isn't the case in my experience. When I wake, I have a hard time feeling energized enough for a run. When I do get out there, I feel sluggish and irritable. This is true even if I've tried to fuel with a banana and PB or whatever I can quickly grab pre-run. I know the pattern isn't healthy, and I understand what is behind the behavior. Still, I wonder if the excess sugar and or the timing is causing the hangover I experience every morning afterward. Is this all just messing with my blood sugar, or what is happening to cause the irritability and sluggishness?
All right, before you jump in, Feathers, I love that she said y'all, unless that was just how Megan read it.
No, she wrote y'all.
Okay, I like that. And two, ice cream after ice cream? How's that going to help you?
Sounds delicious.
Hit me, Megan. I know. You know what I would do? I just wouldn't have ice cream in the house.
Right. No, that's a strategy. So, you know, the reason that I wanted to talk about this was because I think this is very common. I see nighttime eating behaviors sabotaging morning runs for a lot of runners that I work with. And I think we get into the habit of eating after dinner when we're not hungry for a million different reasons. And sometimes it's emotional. Sometimes it's how we're coping after a stressful day. Sometimes it's that we've underfueled all day, so then we eat too much at night. Sometimes it's just that we've gotten in a habit of doing one of these things. And then every single time dinner's done and we go sit on a certain couch in our living room, we associate that couch with snack, with food. So we can't sit there without thinking about food. And it's just a behavior and a habit that we've ingrained night after night after night. And honestly, this can be really hard for a lot of people to break. So I think, you know, this listener was saying, like, I know that it's a habit. I know it's just a behavior. I know it's not related to my eating, you know, but I think just because it is so common for so many people, I think it can be really helpful if you don't realize why you're doing something to try to figure out that cause so you can tackle it. Because just like they were saying, it can really screw with how we feel in the morning. Like a carb load is one thing, but when we're eating like very high fat, high sugar foods like that, and then trying to go to bed at night, probably the first thing that's happening here that's making this person feel crummy when they wake up in the morning is we don't sleep as well. If we have a huge meal, which we could consider this, right, more calories than a meal probably, in our stomach, because our body is spending so much energy digesting that very complex, heavy meal, that we don't get the same quality of sleep overnight. So they're probably waking up in the morning, regardless of how long they were actually in bed, just not sleeping as well as they would have if they hadn't snacked or eaten a pint of ice cream before bed.
Okay, but you've talked in the past that it's good to have a little protein or something before you go to bed. When is the cutoff for that then?
So I think like a snack is fine, but it sounds like from what this person is saying that it's like a lot of nutrition, right? It's a lot of energy we're putting in our body that we don't necessarily need. If we're having a bedtime snack, we're probably thinking about trying to make sure we're fueling for the morning well. It's intentional, right? We're choosing something that, you know, helps give us a little bit more before bed if we've eaten a really early dinner and we're going to run really early in the morning versus like a free-for-all of, let's see, 4 to 5 hours of just grazing. You know, that's a lot more total energy that our body has to figure out what to do with while we're sleeping.
Well, that's the other thing people are eating now. Like are the Halo and that type of ice cream still
popular? I don't see much about them. Oh, they are?
Yeah. It's still a thing. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Like so the low calorie, you can eat the whole pint type mentality. Yeah.
I think that does set people up for a behavior of like it's almost like you train someone to eat a pint of ice cream in a sitting, which is kind of crazy that a pint used to be considered, you know, like that's what you got for 2-3 people instead of getting a, you know, the half pint. For a family.
Right, right. I totally agree. And I think, too, a lot of us have used food or alcohol or something as a way to wind down at the end of the night, and then we ingrain that habit. So if we get in the habit of eating a whole pint of Halo Top to wind down most nights, it's like we're just ingraining that habit of I need something to eat to calm down. I want something sweet to go to bed. And then I think sometimes it just gets a little crazier and extended into too many hours that we're just consuming more than our body needs at that time, which, you know, if we overeat, if you think about it, like Thanksgiving, if somebody sits down and overeats, you feel very sluggish, very tired, you almost feel hungover, your hands are swollen, your feet are swollen, like when you eat too much in one sitting. So that's basically what this person is saying. When they wake up in the morning, they feel hungover, which that's absolutely true. If we overconsume too many calories, period, no matter where they're from, in that type of excess. I'm not talking just a couple hundred. Like, it sounds like this is a pretty decent amount. We will feel that way. We will have crazy blood sugar swings overnight. When I was wearing that continuous glucose monitor for a while, there was one night that I just felt like snacking, and I was just like, let's see what happens. And I just ate whatever the heck I wanted before bed. My blood sugar was going crazy the first 3 hours I was asleep. When I looked at it the next morning, and I did not sleep well, I was like, that's probably reinforcement to not do that, you know? So not saying we all need to slap one of those on, but I do think there probably are some kind of crazy blood sugar swings too that not only interrupt sleep, but then leave us feeling a little crummy the next morning. So, I mean, I think it sounds like they already have the feedback to make these behavior changes. It's just, you know, doing it.
Well, that is my question, because I do think that, you know, we talk about fueling for the things that you need to do. We don't talk about necessarily cutting calories or doing that typically on this show. This show is about fueling what athletes need for to get through a workout. But if someone is having problems and they are sabotaging their diet, regardless of time of day, what are some things that you can do to, one, recognize that you're doing it, and two, to maybe set a new habit or change something so that it's easier for you not to be, you know, overeating or over fueling at the wrong time.
Well, especially if it's night, like, we have no willpower come the end of the night. Like, we're tired, we're exhausted. That has been used up throughout the day. Like, we can't just go into every single evening like, I'm just not going to do it tonight. You can't, like, hard head straight through it. Like, we need to change our environment. So when we really look at how our habits are changed, we can't go and sit in the exact same chair in front of the exact same TV and expect our bodies not to want to do what they're used to doing. So we need to change that. So a lot of times I'll be like, do you have another TV in your house? Yeah, in my bed. Or yeah, in my basement. I'm like, let's go there. Don't take food with you, but let's go there instead and see if just breaking that environment that we've constructed these habits in is enough to get our mind off of it to do something else. Or if it's nice out, can we go for a walk? Can we have an activity that we do directly after dinner to break that habit of snacking? Like, could we go do yoga or meet with a friend or something to physically get out of that snacking environment in our house? And a lot of times those types of things are going to be more successful than literally just being like, don't buy it, don't eat it. You know, those things just often don't work for us long term.
Yeah, it's still hard. And I know that for me, if I come home, I can break any kind of pattern by just doing, like, if I jump on the bike, mm-hmm. or if I do a little exercise or weightlifting or whatever, when I get home, as tired as you are, and the last thing you want to do is that activity. Usually it can interrupt the normal pattern long enough that, you know, I can let that urge or whatever pass so mm-hmm. that, you know, I can move on with my evening.
Right. And if we still want something sweet, go get something sweet, right? But the initial thought is, like, to break that cycle from starting and see, like, do you even want it anymore? And maybe you won't. And especially if you're thinking about, I don't want to feel like that tomorrow, that can be a powerful tool too.
And why is it, like, okay, so even with, you could talk about it with ice cream, you can talk about it with alcohol. Why is it that you would expect to feel better immediately? So say that she doesn't eat all the ice cream tonight, and, you know, if she finishes a reasonable dinner, has maybe a snack before bed, and then, you know, a regular night, chances are she's still going to wake up feeling a little bit like crap. Why is it that our body still, like, it takes a while for it to not have that hangover feeling in the morning, even when you stop a behavior?
Yeah, I mean, part of it could just be it takes us a while to catch up on, I know some people would argue we can't catch up on sleep, but you know what I mean? Like, think about, like, when you have one night where you don't sleep well, it takes a few nights to feel better, you know? So I don't think it's always an immediate reward. But I don't know. I mean, if somebody's consuming significantly more than their body needs right before bed, I would think they would feel a lot better, like, as soon as they change that, you know? Maybe not as good as they're going to feel a week down the road, but I would think that you'd have pretty immediate, like, feeling better on the morning run to kind of reinforce what you had done the night before in a positive or negative way.
Yeah, Megan, thanks for opening up and sharing that story about you eating all that ice cream. It's really costing us a lot. I wanted to talk to you about our finances. And it's only quality stuff. She's like Ben and Jerry's. It's like expensive. Haagen-Dazs.
The best part is I've never met another human in my life that is more like, eh, about that kind of stuff than Meg. So you just pinning the blame on her for that was good. Yeah.
I do, to a certain degree, I've gotten past it, but there was a point in my life, if there was ice cream in the house, I could hear it. It was calling me like the sirens, you know, towards the rocks.
Yeah.
It was like, ah.
Yeah, I feel you. I love desserts and sweets. So
What is something that you crave that you have to control yourself with?
My answer's easy.
What's yours, Meg?
An adult beverage in the evening.
All right, feathers.
I was gonna say vodka. gosh, I don't know. I think it just depends. Like, there's like swings that I'll go through where I like really want like chocolate and peanut butter and like things like that. But we always have that stuff in the house, so it's like, I don't know. I guess I just feel like if I want it, it's there, and I eat. If sometimes I'll eat more than I want, and then I'm like, I don't want that anymore. Like, I'll eat chocolate chips straight out of the bag. Like, that's probably one of my favorite guilty pleasures, you know. And well, like, you sometimes I'll be like, oh, that was kind of a lot. Come up with a recipe for that. Yeah. I'll try them on saltines next time. We have some. Yeah. My kids call them
no-bake Milano cookie.
I thought I was driving home from the airport from Atlanta when I was listening to that one, and I was like dying laughing. I'm like, he's seriously trying to compare a saltine cracker to a Milano.
Wait, this is the best part, though, that I don't know if everyone caught, is that Robbie had a Milano, and then he had Thomas's, like, saltines and chocolate chips that, like...
Ghirardelli's chocolate
chips. That he, like, shoved into his face, but then it crumbled everywhere. He left half of the Milano cookie on the table, and he scraped the crumbs and all of the chocolate chips and finished that in his mouth and was like, that was really good.
He did say, really? Like, this is really good. Like, you could tell he was not just being nice. Like, he was legit... engaged in your discovery.
All right, this next question from Brett, I enjoy quite a bit because I can relate to it directly. He said, hello, Fuel for the Soul crew. Love the podcast. I hope you can help me by answering this question on the show or just personally through email. I just ran my first half marathon in Green Bay, and during the last 2 miles, I started to have bad cramps in my calves. I have never experienced calf cramps in my life while running, and it's leading me to search for answers as to what went wrong and to prevent it in the future. The heat was definitely a factor during the race, and I tried to account for that by taking an LMNT the night before, Gatorade Endurance at every water station during the race, and I took a salt tab at the halfway point. My HR was running hot since the beginning, and right now my personal theory is that I was above my LT the entire race, leading to my glycogen stores depleting quicker than I anticipated, eventually hitting the wall at mile 11, thus causing the cramps. If you agree with this, what can I do to slow the rate of glycogen burn? I had 3 gels on the course, one every half hour. For reference, I'm 5'11 and currently 200 pounds. P.S. I do want to note that I had a good 2-day carb load beforehand, too.
So many details.
Can I take a guess here?
Yeah.
Even though he had the element.
Elementy.
Yeah. The day before, he's still not hydrating enough.
Yeah. I think that's a piece of it. He brought up something that I think is worth discussing, though, because I'm not sure we've ever tackled it on here, was the whole thought of glycogen depletion and heat. So we do burn through glycogen stores much faster in the heat than we do on like a nice day. We've talked about like shivering and when it's really cold and burning our glycogen stores. In fact, I feel like walking to the start of the Boston Marathon, Meg was like, I'm shivering, I'm losing glycogen. You know, I know we've talked about that one. Yeah. But on the flip side, if we get too hot, you know, one study specifically showed that we increased our glycogen usage by 40% when it was hot out versus when it wasn't, you know? Wow. So obviously that's like an extreme example. But he's right. Like when it's hot out, we are going to torch through those glycogen stores sooner. So he said he had his 2-day carb load. So that was good. I guess my thought at 200 pounds, that was a lot of food to have to eat in 2 days. So did we really nail it, or do we need to like extend it to 3 days? What are you thinking, T?
But even a quick question on that. Yeah. So you're saying that your glycogen stores can go down. Would that cause cramping?
So it can, like being glycogen depleted. So they've done some research where they look when our, so we store glycogen in our muscles and also our liver, but what we're fueling our muscles with is the glycogen that's actually in our muscles. So when they're totally depleted, what we're finding is our muscles contract a little bit differently. So having like next to no glycogen stores or not taking enough carbs or eating enough daily carbs can increase that risk of having some nutrition related muscle cramps. So I think that could absolutely, you know, be a piece of it. And, you know, if he was working harder, he would be burning through more carbohydrate stores because we know we burn more carbs, the higher our intensity. So I think he's right. He absolutely just ate through his glycogen stores way too fast. So three gels probably weren't enough to keep fueling him. So that could have been a piece of the cramping. But then, of course, as we've talked about, you know, a lot here, is that it can also be related to electrolyte deficiencies or dehydration. So if that was the case, then you're right, he had the element T the night before, which is 1,000 milligrams of sodium. But if he was out there for, sounds like maybe 2 hours, I don't think he ever told us how long he was out there for the half, but he very well could have not been getting enough from just Gatorade Endurance on course. We've talked about that before, that we don't know how it's mixed. It's probably isn't full strength, so you're not getting a ton of sodium from it. Did his gels have sodium?
How much is in the cup?
Right, like, right, right. Yeah. I think it's probably a combination of both. And then, of course, we know muscle cramps can happen not nutrition-related, right? But this is a nutrition podcast, so we like to check those boxes first and foremost.
Megan had this exact problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, it turned out to be almost like a perfect storm in combination, I think, of a little bit of everything, and fixing the hydration and nutrition pieces also benefited me in training so that I could work harder up until race day. My body was more adjusted to the faster paces, was used to taking in that much liquid and fuel. And so all of that, I think, has what's kept them at bay for the most part. So yeah, like, yes, it's probably in this case because it was hot, nutrition or hydration related, but it also goes back to like his training. Like, was this an extreme effort that you weren't used to doing in like your training? Was this completely out of realm for you? Like, there's so many questions that go back to
the cramps. Right. And like you're saying, if he was over his skis here in a pace in that temperature, maybe it was a normal pace when it was cooler, that could have strained his muscles, which would have been more of like a muscle cramp related to how hard they were working and nothing to do with nutrition. Or most of the time, it's like a little bit of everything that just comes together in this like perfect storm. So, I mean, for him, I would focus a lot more on hydration and sodium, both the night before, the morning of, during. He probably didn't take enough out there. And then obviously being smarter about the pacing so that you're not torching through your glycogen as fast or working your muscles too hard too soon to have them kind of seize up towards the end. So yeah, lots of things to play with and do a little different next time for him.
What would be your recommendation for him? Like, if he's going back out there and training, what does he need to think about?
I would love to see him with a higher sodium drink in his hand, like a handheld, you know, so that we know that he's getting more sodium or higher sodium gels out there. I think that would be a huge piece because at 5'11", 200 pounds, like that body's burning a ton of energy and probably losing a lot of sodium and fluid. You know, a lot of our studies on runners are 5'5", 140 pound people, men and women, you know, so, you know, he's burning significantly more energy out there and losing a lot more fluid as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know, like, just, like, what's his sweat rate? Like, is it insane? Mm-hmm. Is it crazy? Like, do you need, like, a ton of...
So this could be a good recommendation for somebody to take a sweat test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he would know for the next, like, if he's lining up for another half marathon, he would know, okay, this is exactly how much I'm going to have to replenish during a run. And if he nails that and still has cramps, then we could say, glycogen score, you're not fueling enough before the marathon, maybe during the marathon for performance. So that would be like the prescription if you were.
Yeah. I mean, and I literally just walked through this with someone this morning and they were like, you help Meg, can you help me? And it was cramps. And that's exactly what I do. I take a step back and I'm like, all right, tell me what you did in your last race when this happened. And I'm literally back here calculating, okay, this is how much sodium you had. This is about how much fluid you had. Okay, this is what you had. This is what we need. How are we going to get it? And then we talked through the different options of like, do you want a handheld? No. Do you want a salt tabs? Yes, I'll try that. You know, and we come up with a plan based on this didn't work. This is what you did and it didn't work. So what do we need to change that from to, and like, how do we practice that? So it's fun. The puzzle pieces.
Yeah, but Brett, good luck to you. I've been there. It's a lot of factors involved. You just got to start somewhere and pluck away and hope that it you figure it out.
And once you do figure it out, then you become a super fast runner like Megan over here.
Yep, sure do.
Just crushing everything.
All right. Our next question is about the 5+ hour marathon. So this says, hi, Thomas, Megan, and Megan. I just found your podcast this past week after finding the drop the week before. Both are great. The question answer may already exist, and if so, please let me know which episode so I can listen. I'll be starting my New York City Marathon training next month, finally getting to use my lottery win from 2020, and want to know the best fueling for those of us who will probably spend 5+ hours out on the course. That means the last wave to start, the heat of the day, and a lot of fuel to carry. I love listening to all the advice and know you will have some great words of wisdom for fueling a slower paced marathon. Background, this will be my 4th marathon, but also 7 years since my last one. More recent long distance racing was a 50K Ultra and half Ironman. Both offered more options to actually eat and better modes of transporting food, hydration backpack, and bike pouches.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors at play here. So even if you're not a 5+ hour marathoner, you're not running New York City, I think there's things we can all take from the recommendations here, because we need to be thinking through all of these types of things when we're going into it. Like this race, she's not allowed to carry a backpack, and that's how she typically hydrates. So like, we need to know these things going into our training so that we can have a plan and practice it beforehand. So I think the biggest thing with New York City is that it's a late start. And if she's in the final wave, she's finishing after or starting after breakfast and lunch. So she needs to be thinking about how is she fueling all morning long to make sure she's not starting that race already depleted, which is very common. The nerves of the travel of the bus, boat, bus, ferry, however people are getting there, you know, it's a lot, right? And it's a lot, especially if she hasn't raced in 7 years, she could be kind of nervous about this. And when we're nervous, we don't feel hungry. So we need to have a plan to make sure she's fueling her body well before she even starts, would be the first thing, like 2 meals, a couple snacks, staying hydrated, all that kind of stuff. And then as far as the warmer temperatures go, like that is a thing, right? The longer we're out, I think all of us were out there longer at New York City than we expected to be last year. And no matter your pace, the longer you're out there, the more you're sweating, the more you need to hydrate. So hourly goals for hydration are going to be the same no matter how long we're out there. But obviously, if we're out there longer, like we're taking in a lot more, which means we have to figure out, are we carrying that? Are we refilling? If so, how many refills do we need to carry? So there is, you know, more logistics when it comes to being out there a little bit longer when it is going to be warm. So we watch the weather. Hopefully it's not as blazing hot this year. But really, I just want her to have a plan as to what liquid is she using? Is she carrying it or is she using it on course? And if she's carrying it, just making sure that she has enough refills and she knows to stop and have people help her, you know, refill what she wants to use and practice that, you know, now. And then as far as like being out there and on your feet longer, you know, recommendations are still that we focus hourly, just like we said with hydration. Like we need to have a goal of how much we're going to take in per hour. Word is out there for more hours. So that means we have to carry more with us as well, which can be tricky. I think somebody just asked recently if I'd do a post like showing where somebody could carry 10 gels, 12 gels. Because, I mean, that's a lot, right? Like that's really going to take some strategery to figure out like where to stop.
But that's what you got to do. You got to put it everywhere. Like I think, I forget, someone asked me the other day and I was like, well, I start with a handheld. So I have some in there. I have some in my sports bra. I have some in my shorts. Like you got to load yourself up and get creative with
Ben Johnson has actually sewn in new pockets to his shorts so he could carry more. I mean, I think that that's going to be your biggest issue because a marathon like New York, the water stations are pretty substantial, and you're going to be able to get the hydration you need. The gels are going to be the issue. So you're saying for 5 hours, you're saying 2 an hour, so one every half hour, and you can kind of take the last one off because you're going to go. But that's around nine gels, right?
It is, yeah. And I know they do make a lot of, both men and women's, like longer, tight shorts that have pockets all the way down the sides of your thighs, you know? So you could stack 3 gels in each side, you know,
But the other thing also is, We like to use a gel packet because it's quick and it's easy and you're going for time. Mm-hmm. So if you're not pushing the pace, you could carry a bunch of the Cliff Blocks, or you could mm-hmm. carry, you know, which you could put undo two packs, put it all in one Ziploc bag yep. and tuck the Ziploc bag someplace, which would be, you know, that's three servings.
Right. I've had people wear two sports bras and put it between, like in a bag, like you're saying. You know, obviously that won't work for a guy, but, you know, there's all sorts of ways that you can try it. I also, if going back to our never second conversation, I have somebody who really loves them but is having too much trouble opening them. So they're going to get one of those little flasks that holds like 6 ounces and just put all their gels in there. Or I don't know how many it would hold, not quite all of them. So you could even do something like that where you have one bottle of a bunch of stuff and it's marked to where you want to take it. And
Hammer Nutrition is a big advocate of that. They'll sell you a big mm-hmm. jug or bag of their gel, and they'll sell you a handheld squeeze bottle. And they're like, just fill mm-hmm. the squeeze bottle, which for ultras and stuff is perfect, which I would consider a 5-hour marathon mm-hmm. is like an ultra where you're going to be out there mm-hmm. for a while. So like holding a flask of gel might be an option mm-hmm. For you.
Well, and I know you said the water stops are there. Plenty of them, but like even Megan and I carried handhelds last year, and mm-hmm. not only then do you have another pocket for more gels, but then you don't have to worry about stopping at the water stops, at least for like the first half.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And two, like if you're going to be out there for over 5 hours, if you're okay with like pausing, eat a granola bar. Like have somebody on course that like has a granola bar that if you need it 3 hours, then you can stop and eat it. Cause I mean, if you think about it, you're out there over a meal when you're out there over 5 hours. And if the intensity is a little bit lower, you can easily digest like food, you know? So really kind of thinking about like, are you going to need something like that out there? And that's fine.
All right. We have one more listener question here from Diane. And she said, why do race fuel calculators always say X number of carbs per hour after the first hour of running? What is the deal with that first hour? Do I include the carbs eaten right before the run in that hourly total? Thanks for your insight here. Love you guys.
I love this because do you guys remember a lot of gels used to say that too? Like take one every 30 minutes after 60 minutes of exercise. Like that was a very like well-known statement for a while, and it's outdated science. We know we need to fuel much earlier and often than that. So that's all this is. It's not the most updated recommendations to wait and fuel an hour. And we've talked about that a lot on here too, that if we wait to fuel.
Starting line gel.
Right. You need to start at the starting line and then fuel every 30-ish minutes after there. So we've got a calculator on our website that will tell you, you put in your grams of carbs per gel that you want to use and your goal time, and it'll tell you how many you need to carry. And it'll start with that start line gel, and then it'll have the rest of them out. So that's just at featherstonenutrition.com, and it's the race fuel tab. But, you know, I think it's just things evolve, right? You know, we've talked about the fact that people didn't even use to fuel during marathons, you know? So the more that we know, literally, we need to be changing kind of our perspective here. And honestly, it's just outdated.
It is interesting that she's saying there's all of these fuel calculators out there that still say this. And it's like, come on, people.
People don't update they don't update their websites.
True. All right. I think that's it for today, unless there's anything else we need to cover. Thomas, did you think of your question?
I didn't, but it was so good. Mm. I know it was good because I got excited to ask it, and then it just vaporized.
You're in luck, because we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we will be back in 2 weeks. So if you have a question that we haven't answered, you can send us an email at fuelforthesoulpodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, I know what the question
slide
was.
Slide into Megan's DMs.
I know what the question is. I'm going to interrupt.
Here we go.
All right. Hey, you may or may not know this because it's not really nutrition. It's more on the drug side.
Drugs.
So
got it.
I went to get the little piece of basal carcinoma out of my chest. And she said my blood was very thin. Mm. I guess that just means I'm bleeding a lot. Mm-hmm. And she's like, do you take a lot of Advil? And I don't consider myself taking a lot of Advil. Mm-hmm. But I would say at the time before this, I haven't taken any since this because she scared me. Mm-hmm. But I would say at least like once a week for stuff. My foot's been aching, so I've been using it as an anti-inflammatory for that, which seemed to help. But when she said that and she got concerned, and she's a, I don't know that she's a doctor. I think she's a physician's assistant, but she was like, oh yeah, if you take Advil, like, ulcers in your stomach, and once you get an ulcer from Advil, it doesn't go away.
She scared
you.
You'll
continue to get them. Really is scared me a lot.
Fear mongering.
And I know another person that takes a lot of Advil.
Not a lot.
We've talked. She's decreased.
Okay. Is it as bad as she was making it sound? Like, do I need to be concerned? Like, if my foot hurts, that I shouldn't be taking Advil?
I mean, if you're taking it every single day, she's not wrong, especially if you don't have food in your stomach when you take it. It is really hard on your GI tract. Like, sometimes when people come to me and they have, ongoing GI issues, I'm like, do you take NSAIDs often? You know, because it really can kind of tear up and inflame your GI tract and then, like she said, cause ulcers. But that's, again, if you're taking it chronically, daily, and you're not taking it with food, you know, it's a long-term thing. If you're just taking it once or twice a week, I wouldn't be too worried. I would be, your blood's probably thin. Are you still taking the omega-3 supplement?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, that'll thin your blood. So that's kind of where my mind went. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I really have cut things back. I take a daily vitamin. I do vitamin D and the Protandim.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything in there that would thin your blood. I do remember
tumor.
a couple of surgeries I've had. They're like, you're a bleeder. And my blood type is Rh negative. And one of the doctors told me one time that if you're Rh negative, that you bleed a little more. You don't clot quite as quickly. I don't know if that's true or not, but maybe you're Rh negative. I don't know. There's lots
negative
of reasons.
Split.
Your blood could be thin, not just.
All right. So follow up question to that. So then I'm like, okay, my issue usually is running related when I'm taking Advil. So it's going to be tendons, muscles, bones, that kind of things that are hurting. And usually the reason I would take an Advil is it takes care of the swelling, loosens things up. It feels like things aren't as tight. So taking Tylenol is a painkiller. So it's going to block the pain, not necessarily help with swelling and that kind of stuff.
It's not.
And I've also heard Tylenol is harder on your liver or something.
Liver. Yes.
So Tylenol is not a good solution for me.
I wouldn't think so. What about, like, and I know you guys have it, the Voltaren cream, the
That's what I was just
whatever
say.
It is, because that's topical. That's, so you're not ingesting
the same
it.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's an NSAID?
Yeah. Yeah.
It says it on the bottle. That's why they're like, wash your hands as soon as you put it on your body.
Which why?
I used to do very carefully, and I'm like, whatever.
Why? Because your hands are going to be all like.
Yeah, you just don't want that going.
I'm pretty sure it started for arthritis in people's hands. So, I mean, they're leaving it on their hands. I don't know. But I would try something like that first. That's what I try to do.
We might need to order more of that.
Like, to. Okay. It's pretty cheap now that it's generic. It used to be really expensive when it was a prescription. Yeah.
All right. Full circle with that Voltaren cream and Saran wrap situation.
Got haywire
the
there.
Win.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will be back in 2 weeks.
All right. That was a fun one. Peas and carrots, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Got very serious.
I will say that maybe one of Megan's weaknesses was inside of me already, but
that's so weird. That is not how you phrase that ever.
Okay. Anyway.
Oh, you can't say that. You cannot say that. Absolutely cannot say that.
Not allowed. Snip, snip.
Can you do that again?
Yeah. Plenty of protein in that.
Oh.
Low fat, low carb.
Okay, you just don't get a sign off.
I'll do it. All right, ready?